Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Bree. You can also add emergency responder, too. after this last week, I think I've acquired a new title, so... Mm-hmm. We can add that to it, but it's an important one, and I've learned a lot over the last week, and I'm looking forward to sharing the story today and talking to everyone. And I'm glad you could join me this afternoon. Today's show actually has three kind of parts to it, three areas that I want to explore. The first one is be careful what you search for, because the answer is never what you expected. And I am purposefully using the word search and not wish for, because I know that's the adage. But in this case, it's more about be careful what you search for, because the answer will never be what you expected. Number two, responding, how to respond in times of emergency, how to offer love and support. And the third part I want to explore today is how to adapt to the new normal after an emergency, and how to learn to accept and receive love and support when you find yourself in a new role. So that's the teaser about where we're going to go today. You're invited to be part of the conversation. We'll open up the phone lines in a bit. Our number is 805-781-3875. Always like to hear your take on it, or what you're feeling and thinking about today as you hear the conversation. You can also get in touch with me through email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, or find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. If you like the page, you'll get updates of the shows that are coming. You can also leave me a message there if you'd like to get in touch. And if you'd like to listen to previous shows, you can go to kcbx.org under the News Talk tab, or right at the top, and all of our shows are streaming there. Bree does a great job of keeping us up to date. And if you'd like to listen on your device, you can podcast our shows through iTunes, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and hit subscribe, and they will automatically be downloaded or uploaded on which direction onto your device, and you can listen at your convenience. So last Thursday, I'm just going to start off by telling you the story of how I got to where we are today. So last Thursday was one of those glorious mornings where you wake up and I thought, gosh, this is the first weekend in a long time that I really don't have anything on my plate, really anything pressing. And, you know, I have fun things on my plate on a regular basis. I spend a lot of time driving up to the Bay Area to take care of my granddaughter, which has been a joy. I, you know, get to see my family often. I like being helpful when I can. I have lots of grading to do for school, which is fine because I assign the papers. Like all of the stressors I feel right now in my life seem to be stressors I have happily taken on doing the show, you know, whatever those responsibilities that I have. But it was the first time in a long time that I didn't have to get anywhere quickly, and I didn't have to grade anything that was critical. It was just an open weekend. I thought, what am I going to do to fill this time? I thought, you know, one of the things you learn quite early when you are do the work of a caregiver or as a therapist or as a educator, nurturer, counselor, parent, support system, anytime you're in a role primarily as support or caregiver for others, it's really important to stay healthy emotionally and physically, mentally, to take care of yourself. It's one of the adages of my profession is to, we're supposed to do self-care, which I've always liked. So, you know, exercising and getting a massage once in a while, or most importantly, talking to others, having someone that we speak to. So last week I thought, I'm going to check in with one of my friends I haven't seen for a long time, and I have some stuff I want to get off my chest, and this will be great. So I drove to Santa Barbara to have a conversation with my friend, and I've known her since I was 22. She's seen my whole adult life unfold. We know all of each other's stories. And I said, you know, I'm kind of in this place where I have a lot of things that I'd love to do, you know, that I feel like that a little bit of pressure. Maybe should I be writing a book? Should I be doing more with the show? You know, should I be growing myself in some other ways? I'm at that time in my life. Should I be expanding myself? You know, I'm just not sure if I'm kind of spinning my wheels being the support person for my family system. And while we were talking, my phone lit up and I got three calls kind of back to back. One was my daughter, one was my mom, and then one was my sister. I said, that's really odd, because I didn't expect any phone calls, and they all know that I'm down here. So we finished our conversation, and I, you know, got in the car to answer the phone call. And long story short, because this could be a longer story, there was a family emergency. My brother-in-law ended up in the hospital having emergency surgery, and I needed to drive to the Bay Area to take care of my niece and nephew. And all of a sudden, everything in the world was flipped over in another way. And the thought I had was, if I had ever questioned the importance of my role in the family, right, that importance of kind of being the person that can be counted on to step up and help, right, to be available, to be a caregiver, to be trained in a way, to come forward when in need, that was my message. If I was searching for some other sign that I should be doing something different in my life, or I needed to open other doors or, you know, expand myself, that search and that quest was ended immediately because I was needed in a really profound way. And it was interesting because we had just had the conversation last Tuesday about paid care, unpaid care, and the role that primarily women play in society when it comes to taking care of and nurturing the family. And then in our society, we leave very little room in anyone's life to be able to step up and do that care when it's needed, because the pressures of just keeping food on the table or a house over our head, you know, or keeping up with the demands of work, people aren't really prepared to be able to deal with an emergency. So I was happy that I was able to step in and go up and be with my niece and nephew and help my sister as I could and kind of rally the troops. So I was there through Sunday night and then came back and taught yesterday, and I'm going to head back up this Thursday. And through navigating this full family crisis, I was reminded of a few really key things, and things I'm sure you know and things I know on some deep level, but you don't really have to tap into unless you're called to action. But I was reminded of these kind of key things. Number one, you're never fully prepared, and there is never a good or convenient time for an emergency to happen, right? You might think you're in this kind of quiet readiness state where I'm just living my life, but if something comes up, I'll be ready. But you're never fully prepared. Packing when you have to leave quickly usually ends up with too much underwear and not enough shirts. So being prepared was the first thing I learned, that you're never really ready. And number two, that nothing really rallies the troops better than an emergency, rallies the family around. And if I am, you know, a naysayer about technology, which I have a lot of misgivings, I am really thankful for cell phones at this point, because it was wonderful to be able to connect everyone in a family chat quickly to give updates and to know what was happening and to be able to send support and love. Number three, you find out really quickly who your friends are, who comes forward, who's immediately available to help, you know, who has your back. Also, number four, there is an art to offering support and care. There really is an art to offering sympathy or coming forward and offering your thoughts or wishes for speedy recovery. It's an art, and not many people have mastered it. And maybe it's because we don't have to do it that often. Maybe because we're not ever taught. You know, maybe it should be in that when we're teaching thank you note writing or receiving compliments or giving compliments, we also should add on our list of things to teach young people is how to best offer support. What is the best thing to say in the time of crisis or emergency? And number five, there is also an art to receiving love and support and care, because it can be a challenge for someone who's used to being in charge or in control or having everything in order. It can be a challenge to receive love and support that people are trying to give you. And so I thought that would be a good place to go today. Let's talk about how to best offer support and love and care when someone is going through a crisis or a disruption in their life, or dealing with illness, or dealing with grief, or loss, or trauma, any of those things that can happen to any of us at any time. What is the best thing you can do or say to be of help, to really show how you care in an effective way? And then the other thing I thought we would talk about is how can we, if we find ourselves in the role of caregiver, or find ourselves in a role of dealing with an emergency, how can we best learn to receive that love and not feel like we're going to be seen as weak or needy if we take help or ask for help from others in our life. And as a side note, I guess, to think about, do you have a support system? Who would you call in that time of crisis? Do you have, you know, your own internal 911, your inner circle 911 that you can call and count on if something comes up? And if you don't, it's really an important thing to cultivate, because we all will face times in our lives when we need to reach out, when we'll need someone to help. And in our incredibly busy, busy lives, it can be tough sometimes to access and find the help that's so important. And nothing's worse than to be facing a challenge or a tragedy and feel suddenly alone and isolated. So I am Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I invite you to be part of this conversation today. I could use your love and support also. It's been a long week. So I'm curious to know, when was the time that someone offered you support? And what was good about that support? What was helpful about that support? What was it that they did or said that made you feel their love and support? And my other question is, how is it that you like to be supported? How do you receive that support? You know, some people just want a nice word, you know, I'm thinking about you. Some people really appreciate, you know, getting a hug or having someone to talk to and to vent to and to keep them company. Some people really want to be left alone and to really sit with their thoughts and not have to, you know, worry about the other people in the room. Some people really appreciate food to help them through the time. So what is it you need when you're struggling to feel supported? And if you don't know what you need, let's think about that, because people want to be able to help you. And if you don't even know how it is you can feel supported, it makes it a real challenge to connect those with the big hearts with the people who are in the biggest need. Our number is 805-781-3875. When was a time you were offered support and it seemed to be helpful? And what was that thing that was helpful? And how is it that you receive love and support? How do you best take in other people's well wishes? What feels best? 805-781-3875. I teach a class at Cal Poly called The Helping Relationship. So it's a basic counseling skills course, and it really is kind of a layperson's guide to how to help people deal with a mid-level concern, a struggle, an issue, something, you know, that they're dealing with. And it's a very structured way of helping someone, and it starts with listening, those skills of listening, being able to just create a space where someone, you know, is able to talk about what's going on in their life. As a good listener, you know, the primary skill of good listening is to not offer your advice, not offer your thoughts about what they're going through, not feel like you need to fix them or jump in and tell your story, but really truly listening to someone who needs to talk and share and open up is to be able to sit quietly and kind of be able to keep breathing and show nonverbal love and hold that space so that the person feels like they're being heard and that they can open up and not be afraid of you judging them or pitying them, but just to really say, how can I be here for you? What would you like to share today? What story would you like to tell? So I teach them those skills that start with listening and then talking about how to respond in such a way that you show empathy but not sympathy. That you know, can say, I can see that you're struggling. I can see through your body language or, you know, through the tears in your eyes that you're really struggling. And just to know that I've never been exactly in your shoes, but I can imagine that this is a tough time. And there's something really profound about learning the skills of helping, of how to best be with someone. And when we teach this class, it's taught to psychology majors, but we also teach it to all the child development majors. It's a required course. And I'm so glad because, you know, the child development majors are doing a lot of one-on-one work with parents, with children, you know, if as educators, and there's a lot of opportunities for listening. But I often wonder why we don't teach this class to all of the students, because anyone who lives a life interconnected with other people in their community are going to find themselves in times where they need to know what these helping skills are, how to reach out and how to offer support. What's a challenge is quite often when faced with an emergency, people freeze up, not knowing what to say, not knowing how to reach out. And so that they quite often will either retreat and not want to face it, not want to have the conversation, and not want to go up and say anything. Sometimes there's this fear that if we talk about what happened, maybe if the person's sick or had emergency surgery, that if we somehow say the words out loud that we'll catch whatever that sickness was or whatever that surgery was. We have this fear of talking about crisis for fear of making it bigger or larger. And so instead of talking about what's happening, the issue at hand, by able to say out loud, wow, I can see that your family's struggling. I understand that you're going through a tough time. Just want you to know that I'm here for you. Instead of just acknowledging that a tough time's happening, we kind of retreat and hope that if we don't acknowledge it, it'll go away or that it'll pass and we won't have to say anything. And it really ends up causing a huge divide between the person or the family that's struggling and those people that were supposed to be part of their support group. So some of the things we talk about in dealing with offering support, I saw in action this past weekend, because it's interesting taking my niece and nephew around to do their activities, you know, baseball games and volleyball practice and visiting with friends. And almost every person we came in contact with wanted to offer something, but it was so awkward. You know, most of the people just would see my niece or nephew just like, oh no. And they would kind of get all welled up and want to come hug them. And my niece and nephew just looking at me like, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, it just felt overwhelming to them to have this person kind of coming on so strong with so much sympathy. And I could see that their love and intention was good, but it was more upsetting to the kids to see their friends or their neighbor responding in such an outwardly remorseful way when they were feeling hopeful, the surgery had gone well, things were moving forward, we were over the hump of the emergency. And so I was thinking, wow, I need to do a quick lesson in how to best offer support. The first thing to do is to acknowledge that the person is dealing with an overwhelming situation. Give them some sort of verbal pat on the back, but it doesn't have to be kind of this over-sympathizing, wailing response, because that ends up putting the person in a place where they need to comfort you now because you're almost more upset than the person who's struggling, which with whatever it is, whether it's an illness or a loss or a transition. But do acknowledge it. And it just can be as simple as, I understand you're going through a tough time and I feel for you. Or I understand that this is tough, or I understand your family went through a scare. Or I'm so sorry that you're going through a tough time in your life right now. It doesn't have to be big and flowery. The best help quite often is the simplest words. And so to start there. And don't make it about you. When we want to offer someone comfort, please don't turn it around and say, we went through the same thing. I had the same issue, or I had an uncle who had the same issue, or I had a brother, and then start telling your story, because that then takes away from offering support and makes it about your experience. And all of a sudden, again, you put the person you're trying to offer comfort to in a place where they need to now comfort you and talk about your story. The other thing that we don't want to do is say, I feel so sorry for you. I pity you for going through this. I feel so bad for you. Those words are so patronizing and condescending, and they really seem to always need to be followed with, I'm so glad this isn't happening to me. Because every time we offer this over-the-top sympathy, it ends up becoming something that sounds like, I'm so glad I'm not in your shoes. And that's so disingenuous, and it's also so not true, because all of us face adversity. We all are one when it comes to struggles in life. We just don't see it on each other. We don't tend to walk around and put our first face forward of the things we're struggling with. We tend to go out in public and try to put our strong face forward. But we all have things that we're struggling with, and to give this air of invincibility is not helpful to others. And then to also give this air of, I pity you and feel sad for you, and this is too bad this happened to you. That makes it sound like you're somehow above ever going through a struggle, which isn't true. And the idea in offering comfort and care is to become one with that struggle in such a way that helps the person or the family feel supported to be heard. 805-781-3875 is a number to be part of our conversation. We're talking about how to offer love and support and compassion. What are the best ways to do it? What's a time someone actually offered you support and compassion that felt good, that was helpful? What is it that they did? And how is it that you actually receive love and support and compassion? Hi, Lisa. You're on the air.
What's
on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to kind of underscore what you've been saying is so true. About 10 years ago, my husband at the time was in a skiing accident, and I was alone in Reno with him in ICU. And I had a friend that just, she was able to drop everything and just show up. And we didn't have to talk about anything. It was so known that what I was going through was so gnarly, and there was nothing that could, that her just showing up and sitting and laughing and being there with me to hold my hand. 10 years later, that's what I look to as strong.
Lisa, you're breaking up on me a little bit.
So just a friend showing up was what was...
Well, and I'm sorry that your phone's breaking up, because I agree. I think that a lot of the part of support and compassion, what I started with, that kind of being the emergency responder, having the ability to drop everything and go and be there, is actually something that's tough to do for many people. And that seems to be the one thing that is the most important when someone's going through a crisis, like your husband's accident. You just need another body there, a familiar face. There's nothing she could do to fix it or make it better or change the outcome, but to actually just sit by your side and give you kind of this sense of almost having, I want to say a crutch, but just a familiar comfort next to you is so important. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of this conversation. When was a time someone offered you support well, and what was it they did or said? Along with my advice, or I'm not going to say advice, because one of the things I want to say is don't offer advice, but one of my tips for helping to offer is to, one, keep it simple, affirm the feelings of being overwhelmed that whoever you're offering comfort to could be feeling. If they say to you, I feel overwhelmed, I'm not sure what to do, I don't know where to go, I feel like I'm going crazy, this feels like too much to handle, affirm that that's normal, that in a period of crisis or emergency, it's normal to respond with feelings of overwhelm or confusion or feeling kind of off balance. Because when a crisis happens, it throws our homeostasis off, right? You start off on Thursday morning and you feel like you're going to have a whole day to think about yourself and hang out with friends or enjoy the sunshine. And then the next thing you know, you're on call. Things have totally changed. And so your normal has been shifted, and your psyche responds by kind of feeling a little off balance, maybe a little confused or dizzy. And so it's really important to affirm for people, especially when they're people that are used to being in charge of their life and knowing what's coming and being on top of it. When the rug gets pulled out from under them and they're feeling kind of lost, it's important to say, wow, it would be normal to respond this way. I can appreciate that you're feeling overwhelmed, and I can appreciate that this feels like it'll never end. And I support you through this. And I wish there was something I could do to speed up your recovery or speed up the time or, you know, make it different, but I can just be here for you. Again, the more simple, the better. Don't minimize what the person is going through. That's so important. You know, don't say, well, things happen, or it'll be over soon, or, you know, those platitudes and cliches are so unhelpful. Even though they feel good when they come out of our mouth, they really just land hard on the ground with no help. You know, it was God's will, or bad things happen to good people, or you know, all of those, I can't even think of all the cliches there are, but just offering up those things aren't helpful. Or telling people you didn't deserve this, life is unfair, this should have never happened to you. Well, that also isn't true because things happen all the time. All of us go through things that are unfair or shouldn't feel like they should happen or seem to have cut things short or, you know, taken something important away from us. But that if we are spending our life trying to prevent bad things from happening or railing against bad things that happen or railing against sadness or railing against emergencies or disease or crisis, we're going to spend a lot of time railing and swinging our arms in the air, but that's not going to really be helpful or supportive. And it's much better to be grounded and say, you know, I'm so glad I can be here for you in any way that helps during this time, you know. Knowing that we have to face these things, I hope there's a way that I can be of help for you. But to talk about, you know, honestly, and not try to make things better, not try to fix things, not try to make the person feel like it's okay, you'll get over it, you'll get through it, life will be better on the other side. You know, again, those all sound nice coming out of your mouth, but they're really not the helpful things in the moment, as helpful as things like, What's the best way I can help you today? What's the best way I can listen? What can I do that would help? And for a lot of times, it's something as simple as saying, you know, I've never experienced anything like what you're going through, but I've had struggles. And so I want you to know that I feel for you. And this sucks. And I'm sorry that it's hit you now. And I hope, you know, that you have the support system that you need to move forward. Again, all of the simple phrases, 805-781-3875. Hi, Nancy, you're on the air.
Hi there. Life, I think, gets more complicated when a loved one could really use help and yet lives 2,000 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
I have a sister that who's had many challenges and is currently having challenges, and she even said to me, oh, I wish you could be here. And I'm quite healthy for being getting into my upper 70s, but my husband has he's in his mid-80s, who said, well, I could go and be with her some, but it is very complicated for me because I have such a busy life here. And I thought you might have some suggestions. Well, I'll tell you, besides talking on the phone, I make cards and send her cards. But what else?
Well, Nancy, it's interesting because that was going to be my first suggestion on what are some things we can do besides just, you know, offering sympathy or words of, you know, or words of love. The first thing was send a card, because especially in this technology world, we tend to send texts or emails, which, you know, it's nice to say, hey, I'm thinking of you. But to actually send the card, something that we can look at, right? Something that's there on the table to open.
Yes. And that I make the cards.
Which is even more beautiful because it's filled with love in that way, that she's getting that and receiving that. And sometimes that's all we need, is to have that visual reminder. You know, if I can't be there to physically hold your hand, I'm going to send a picture of us when we were young together, right? Send a picture of you guys when you were young and say, I remember this time and it was so much fun, and kind of talk about those memories and to really, the things that you would say if you were sitting next to her, write those things down.
Yes.
And send those along. I think that that's the best you can offer, because she knows. She knows.
Yes. Well, there's just something so very special about sitting directly next to a sister or a brother, you know, that. But I agree that cards certainly can help, but it's not the same. Maybe that is the best I can do.
And sometimes that is the best we can do. You know, I have family that's also 2,000 miles away and tend to field, you know, phone calls late at night. My daughter's away at school, and I feel so helpless because I want to crawl through the phone, you know, and put my arm around her. knowing that she's going to ultimately be okay, but I want to physically be there. And I'm sure you're feeling those same things. And just sometimes all we can do is kind of sit as close to the phone as we can. And sometimes I'll say, look at a picture of me while we're talking. And maybe that'll help because you'll see my face and hear my words.
One of the reasons I've been feeling badly about not being able to be right next to her is that our older sister passed, and she was 74 when she passed, and she just lived down in the L.A. area, and I still didn't get down there very much at all, and I feel badly about that now, that I wish I had been there for my... physically been there for my older sister.
Mm-hmm. I can hear the sadness in your voice, Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
And guilt is a terrible thing to carry, isn't it?
It is.
Guilt and regrets.
I'll continue making cards. That sounds like maybe the best I can do. Right now my husband is due to have surgery up at Stanford in a few weeks. I have to be there for him.
You do.
Which I certainly will be.
You will. Well, and Nancy, one other thought I had, and Stanford was where we were, and it's a beautiful facility, by the way. But, you know, the work that you're doing to show love and care for your husband, and I'm sure you do things for your friends and neighbors close by. And I've often felt that the work I do supporting the people that I can get to is my way of kind of paying it forward. And I'm sure that your sister, both sisters, had people in their immediate community also that were sharing that love with them. And so sometimes I think that the love I show here will translate into love being shared with my daughter when she's far away and I can't be there.
Mm.
So you're kind of doing a universal share.
Oh, thank you.
I wish you well, and I wish your husband well, and know that I'm holding those feelings of regrets because they are tough, but to continue showing the love the best you can is a great gift.
Oh, well, thank you. I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you for calling. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Karen. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
To just share what happened when my mother passed away. Mm-hmm. And at age 36, I became a matriarch. And that was a pretty tough time. And I can't express how helpful it was that when her obituary ran in the paper, she was very young. She was in her early 50s when she passed. And her picture caught people's eyes because she was young. And I started to receive sympathy cards in the mail, many of them from people I didn't even know. Mm-hmm. And they were just kind of touched by the obituary. And I have a stack of them in a box somewhere, and I'm not even sure who wrote me. But at the time, that was just so incredible. And the notes were just simply cards that said basically what you're telling your listeners to say is, you know, this must be so hard for you. We're thinking of you, you know, best wishes. You know, Joe and Mary Smith or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like I say, again, many times people that I didn't even know. And during that same time, I was so overwhelmed with all of a sudden being the oldest person in my family and having to deal with my mother's services that a local person that she had worked with called me and said, hey, can you let me handle hosting her wake? And I don't even recall her sharing her own feelings about my mother's passing. It was just simply, let me handle this for you.
Mm-hmm.
And another community member called and said, we'd like to help with the beverages at the wake. And of course, in both cases, I said, thank you so much. And what that did was it allowed me the chance to experience my mother's passing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having to handle the details of my mother's passing. And I owe a debt of gratitude to the whole community when I went through that I was able to grieve and process and do things kind of on my own terms without having to handle the logistics of everything. And I mean, what you're saying to your listeners, I've lived, and you're just so right on.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. And, you know, it's one of the places I was going to go with the conversation is how, when we're in a place of crisis or emergency, how do we best take in love and care? And what you were able to do was beautiful because, one, you were able to hand over this job that was going to be yours in a way that was helpful to you, but you also gave these people who clearly wanted to honor your mother a way to be a part of the experience. And I think quite often, you know, there's this disconnect between the people who are having the emergency or the crisis or the, you know, the trauma and the people that want to help them, and this divide of how do we bridge this. And so when you're in the place where you find yourself as the matriarch all of a sudden, or the caregiver, or all of a sudden having to make decisions that you weren't prepared to do, to not try to do it all, and to write down a list maybe of all the things that you know are going to be responsibilities, and then start handing them over, because
absolutely.
To hand them over and allow people in to the process. Because I think in our culture we tend to close off others from the painful parts of our lives, and we've kind of pushed them out so that we always look like we have it together, and then it makes people feel alienated or pushed away or kind of helpless. And how empowering it was to open your doors and say, yes, I could use this support gladly. And it opened your heart and your experience and probably made the process more, I'm going to say manageable is probably not the right word, but as you said, you were able to be there and experience it and not just go numb and go into autopilot.
That's exactly right. And I'm a kind of do-it-all kind of woman. And so it's in my nature to take care of everything and take care of everybody else. And I was so overwhelmed that even if I wanted to, I don't think I could have, but I would have tried and I would have suffered for it.
Yeah.
And thank goodness people stepped forward and didn't really give me the option. They just said, we're going to do this.
Yes.
And will you let us? And I was, you know, so spun out that I could just say, thank you, yes. And I just can't tell you what a personal gift. You know, now here it's been 15 years and I can look back on that and say, I look forward to paying that forward someday.
Absolutely. Karen, thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time to call.
Thank you. Bye.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today we're talking about what happens in times of emergency or crisis in a family. How do we best show comfort and love to those that we know are struggling, whether they're friends or family or neighbors? What can we say? What can we do? How can we cross that divide and do what feels right, but not run away, not hide from it. To say the simple, I'm here for you, I'm thinking of you, really can be enough. Sending that card is so huge, especially, again, at a time where we send a text or emails, or we ask a friend and then send a message through them, to really send something substantial, like a card that they can look at. Flowers are nice, but sometimes even flowers are an overload. Make contact with the family in some way or the person who's struggling and say, how can I best offer support? Offer to organize food or to make calls or help with the kids. Find out if they have a point person who's organizing things for them, and contact them. Don't assume that you know how the person feels who's grieving or is in a state of emergency. Don't assume that you've had those experiences before and start saying, here's what I did in this situation, or here's what's going to happen when your husband or loved one comes home from the hospital. We're going to come back and take your phone calls. This is Public Radio KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist.
Ooh, child, things are going to get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are going to get easier. Child, things will get brighter.
Someday, yeah, we'll put it together and we'll get it undone. Someday, when you hit it much lighter. Someday, yeah, we'll walk in the rays of a beautiful sun. Someday, when the world is much brighter.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. The number to be part of our conversation is 805-781-3875. And I'm asking, what it is that's helpful to you. When is a time that someone offered you support or care or love in a time of crisis that really was helpful and felt good? And how is it that you best receive love or comfort or care? Are you someone that needs time alone and just the space to think and process? Or are you someone who needs to talk and have someone there to support you? Do you want help when it comes to meals? Are you someone that really appreciates having flowers or cards? You know, knowing how we feel supported is really helpful because then we're able to let others know how to step in and be a part of that process. 805-781-3875. Hi, Gina. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm thinking back about 12 or so years ago when my dad passed away. It was a very sudden coronary event. He's been a very, very healthy 84-year-old and had no medical problems, but he passed away, and I got a call. I had to go down on the train, and I spent 3 days when it was finally decided to detach him from life support and watched him die. I came back on the train, and it was during the middle of the day, so my friend Ingrid picked me up and brought me over to Hospital Flow, where she worked at the time. And I just remember she brought me into a kind of a dark room in that beautiful building that Hospice closed in. And she just left me in there, and I was able to cry and write poetry or read my journal or do whatever I did. I don't even remember, but it was such a blessing. And I thank Ingrid to this day because she just brought me to the right place and let me be, and it really, really healing.
Sometimes it takes just kind of that intuition, that sense of what someone might need. And I always encourage people to listen to that too, that if you sense a friend is struggling, you can feel it, then act on that. And it sounds like, you know, Ingrid just sensed where you needed to be. And that's a real testament.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. Thank you for the program. It's a great topic.
Thank you, Gina. I started off the conversation talking about how quickly, you know, things shift in your life where you're going down one path and thought you had an open weekend. And the next thing I knew, there was a family emergency and my brother-in-law ended up having emergency surgery, and all of a sudden the family's rallying around together. And a few things came up with me. I learned, you know, over the course of the last 5 days is that you're never fully prepared or ready. And I'm thankful that I am in a place in my life where I can drop everything and go. And I've always kind of prided myself on being that person in my family, that's the role I have. My dad has that role also. It's sort of in our nature or who we are. But I can't think of anything else that I care as much about as caring for, being available to the people that are important to me. And I saw a quote from Pablo Casals, who is a world-renowned cellist, but also must have been a humanist. He said that the capacity to care is the thing that gives life its deepest significance and meaning. And I feel that. I think that's why I've never, you know, fully dove into other directions that would make me be so busy and so kind of possessed with a project that I wouldn't be able to back away and be there for someone in my family or in my friend group or in my community. But the other part of that, you know, that capacity to care also requires that you're able to receive the support you need so you can maintain the capacity to care. And so in moving through the last 5 days, you know, my sister's a very strong person, also a caregiver and a huge heart person, and the person that's there first for everyone when they're struggling, knows what to say, knows to send the card, you know, knows to send the fruit basket. I mean, she's just incredible. And all of a sudden she's in this situation where everyone's kind of looking at her like, what can we do? You know, you're always the strong person. And I watched with her friends wanted to know how to best pitch in, whether to make meals or do babysitting or, you know, however they could. And so part of the lesson of this whole process is also when we find ourselves in a place where we are not the caregiver, essentially, but we become the person who's needing some support and care, or we find ourselves in the role of caregiver for a loved one who's had surgery and all of a sudden can't be there for us, how do we adapt to our life post that accident or illness or that emergency? How do we adapt to that new normal where all of a sudden now the job of caregiving to one person becomes your primary focus and it changes your family dynamic? It can take time to adjust to those things, and it can take time to rearrange your life, and it can really be a struggle to kind of let go of the reins a bit in our life to make room for other people to step in and fill in where they can. The first thing that's important to do is to actually accept and acknowledge the feelings that you're having when you're going through this crisis or emergency, when you realize that your life is not going to be the same from this point forward, to allow yourself to feel the feelings, to sit with them, whether those feelings are sadness or guilt or regrets or fear or resentment or anger that you're here or relief that this has happened. You know, those are all normal feelings to go through when we're adapting to a new normal in our life. We have to grieve the way things used to be, letting go of what our normal was. Even if we're moving to a better, healthier normal in the future, we have to kind of let go of and grieve what was the past. We have to accept kind of the anxiety of the unknown and accept those feelings of vulnerability and all of a sudden realizing that we're not in complete control over our destiny, and to be able to sit with that sense of vulnerability and let the feelings be there. Don't try to do it all. Don't try to do it all in the moment, but to kind of parse out this space. James Hillman, who is one of the most brilliant therapists in the world of depth psychology, he used to make as part of his practice, you know, he would meditate and do his mindful living practices. And also part of his practice was grieving. And every day he set aside a period of time to grieve those things in his life that were sitting with him. And if we're lucky enough to live long enough, there'll be a lot of things we grieve in our life. We'll lose friends, we'll lose neighbors, we'll lose family members, right? We'll transition from jobs, we'll lose pets. I mean, the longer we live, the more things we will grieve. And being able to set aside time each day to acknowledge those feelings, to cry or to just remember them, is a really important way to care for ourselves. So then we have the energy and strength to go back into our day, into our life, and be there for others. What happens is when we don't acknowledge or allow our feelings to come to the surface, if we don't notice the grief and work with it, if we don't accept the guilt or recognize feelings of resentment or anger and accept them as part of who we are, if we try to push them down and ignore them, I shouldn't feel this way, I shouldn't be like this, if we try to deny that these are part of our being, they hang around and they start to weigh us down, and it starts to be more difficult to process our relationships outside of our lives. We start to get probably a little more tough to be with, probably a little more edgy. But when we take the time away from our day to actually sit with the feelings, it can help us actually gain strength to go back into our lives. If you find yourself in that caregiver role, don't try to do it all. As I think Karen was talking about earlier, people want to help. Your friends really want to be able to do something to show you how much they care about you. And so take the time to sit down and make a list of all the tasks and responsibilities that you have now that your life has changed, things that are coming up, what is your schedule, and then ask for help. Or if you have family members who are kind of looking at you like, what do? Give them a job, give them a role, give them something to do, a purpose, because that's how we build the strength in our systems and our support systems, is by actually leaning on each other and feeling like we've done something to help and being able to move forward from there. And it's also important to attend to your own needs. If you're the caregiver, you know, there is not a best martyr prize. There is not going to be someone who knocks on your door and say, wow, you have completely martyred yourself in such a way that we're going to honor you. That doesn't happen. But you can find yourself feeling overwhelmed. You can find yourself feeling burnt out or resentful if you don't take the time to care for yourself when you are the person who's the primary caregiver. So that's kind of what came up for me this week, kind of recognizing and navigating through a full family crisis in our group. And it's not the first time that's happened. We've had family crises and emergencies over all of my 56 years on the planet. But it was such an unexpected emergency. And I guess that's maybe the definition of of an emergency is that it is unexpected. It comes out of the blue. But we've been through these things before. But I think it was amazing to see how it affected all the members of our family, from the youngest to the oldest, to see the teenagers in our family, you know, really get an opportunity to experience what it's like to care for and love someone and show that love and to show up for them and to try to know what to say. And I wanted my niece and nephew to know, you know, you don't have to have any answers. You don't have to fix anything. You don't have to, you know, save anyone. All you have to do is say, I love you. All you have to do is say, I love you. And I'm glad you're here. And I'm sorry this happened. And give them a hug. And that's all we need. 805-781-3875. When is a time someone offered you support during a crisis or a loss that really was helpful? What is it that they did that felt helpful for you? And do you know how it is that you like to be supported? What can people do when you're in a time of need? 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist, and you can be part of the conversation by calling in, but you can also send us a message on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. We post our shows there each week. You can also leave me a message if you'd like to, and I'm happy to respond, or you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and you can listen to our previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast through iTunes, which is another way to keep in touch with what's going on. If you're wondering, you know, how to best help someone, how you can be there for someone in emergency, a couple of things to not do. Don't give advice. And that was another thing that I saw happen really quickly over the course of this week. Well-intended members of the community wanted to come forward and share their experience, you know, that they'd been through a similar emergency or a similar surgery or similar experience, and they wanted to share what they'd done or what they learned or what they had to do afterwards or what their experience was. Or then they started telling stories not just of, you know, their experience, but someone they knew and then someone else's experience. And I'm really not sure if that makes people feel like they're actually offering something helpful or if it is a way they feel like they're going to fix them. You know, I know quite often in families, we want to show our love in such a way. We want to protect the other members of our family or our friends from being hurt or having bad things happen. So we feel like if we rush in and offer, you know, our advice, our wisdom, it's going to make things better. But the problem is, and think about this, when was the last time someone gave you advice that you really wanted to hear? When was the time that someone actually said, here's what you need to do with your life, and you were happy to hear it and you actually took that advice? Because more often than not, getting advice is really annoying. I mean, you might think, oh, that was well-intended, but it makes you feel like, did the person assume I don't know how to take care of myself? Or did the person assume that I, you know, am stupid? Advice feels good to give. But it's rarely well accepted. And even if you're asking someone for advice, like, I'd really like to know what to do in this situation, you don't really want them to tell you what to do. You really want them to affirm or support what it is you want to do. So if someone says to you, I really need advice, I'm not sure what to do in this situation, instead of telling them what you think, ask them, what would you like to do? What do you think would be the best thing to do in this situation? And hear them out and let them work through that. And when they're done telling you what they think they should do, to say, does that sound like it would work for you? Or how does it feel to talk about that option? What would happen if you did that thing, whatever it was? Allow the other person to come to their own solution about what it is they want to do. That's much more helpful than giving advice. It's much more helpful than coming in and telling someone your story and sharing your experience, and taking away from the person you're trying to help. If you want to be there, you know, I feel like kind of my intuition always says to me, go be there and just sit and be quiet. When I got to the hospital to sit with my sister, there wasn't a lot of talking that needed to be done. There wasn't a lot we could do. And so we sat in the sun and kind of told stories about things that were going on in the world and just kind of sat quietly. And just that physical closeness can be so important. But I wonder, you know, in the world that we've created today, it starts to become a luxury to be able to be with someone when they're hurting. And I don't think it should be like that. I don't think that we should be lucky to be able to go be with someone in their time of need. That should be the first priority we have. And the first thing we're able to do is to drop everything and go be there. Because really, at the end of the day, nothing in our life really matters than the time we spent being with people when they need us. And even when they don't need us, just the joy of being with them. And I think we've given that up. It's been co-opted by this kind of convoluted world we've created in a lot of ways. Hi, Cynthia. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Just real quick following up on that, the advice part is really great advice. but when I was 19 when my dad died, and he was going through an illness with cancer. And one of the best things that happened to me, because I felt so alone, I didn't know anybody else who lost a parent, is somebody finally just sat with me and said, you know, I lost my dad when I was 18 too, and it's really hard, but I was there and now you're here and you'll get through it. Mm-hmm. And it was helpful that somebody took the time to sit and just relate to me where I was, and it opened my eyes that it wasn't, you know, I would eventually be okay, even though I was very sad.
Well, and it's interesting that the person also had the wherewithal just to say, I've been there, but they didn't try to tell you how to feel or to make it better, to fix it. It was just like, you know, I've been where you are, and it sucks.
Exactly.
Because there was no other words that they could offer that would make it any better, but just to know you weren't alone in the journey. And I remember when my friend's dad died years ago, and one of the first things, you know, she said was, I'm in a club I didn't never wanted to be in. And that's the club of someone who lost their dad way too young. And she said one of the biggest struggles was finding other people in that club, because she couldn't relate to anyone else anymore but other people who had been in that same place.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you for taking the time to call. So it's a lot to think about. How do we prepare for emergencies? Are we in a place where we can actually step up and help those who need us when they need us? Have we created a world that's so busy and complex and overwhelming that we can't separate ourselves out and be there when someone needs us most? And if we can't, then do we need to change something so that we are prepared to be an emergency responder? You know, having that emergency bag that has equal amounts of underwear and clean shirts is so important. But more importantly, to be able to drop where you're at and go be there for whatever it is that you need to be there for is so important. And the whole capacity to care is the thing that really gives our life its deepest significance and meaning. Thanks to Pablo Casals for those words. So this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. If you know someone is hurting, send them a card, write it down, put a stamp on it, send it there. If you can, show up. Don't stay. Don't overstay. Make it brief. Give them a hug. Bring a meal. Offer to do something. Don't think you're going to fix them or make it better, but just say, hey, I know you're going through a tough time, and I'm here for you. You're not alone. And that's it. And then if they are able to reach out and ask you for something, then be there for them. Because really, as I said, at the end of the day, there is not much we have at the end of our lives other than the relationships we formed and how we were able to care for each other through that time. So I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Thank you, as always, for supporting Public Radio KCBX. You can find me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. As always, I appreciate you supporting Public Radio KCBX. Here's some little love from Otis Redding.
If I were the sun way up there, I'd blow with love most everywhere. I'll be the moon when the sun goes down, just to let you know that I'm still around. That's how strong I love you. Whoa, that's how strong I love you. That's how strong I love you, baby, baby. That's how strong I love you. I'll be the weeping willow drowning in my tears, and you can go swimming when you were here. And I'll be the rainbow after the tears are gone, wrap you in my colors and keep you warm.
You can. I'll be the breeze after the storm is gone to dry your eyes.